In the Western world, our news headlines have been continually dominated by the conflicts going on in Ukraine and Gaza, and more recently by Donald Trump's territorial threats against Greenland and Panama. Most of my audience are Westerners, and that probably means that in all of the noise that's going on right now, you missed hearing about one of the biggest geopolitical earthquakes in decades that also just took place in sub-Saharan Africa. Here, Rwanda, a small landlocked country only about the size of Massachusetts, is busy covertly invading and conquering swaths of land from its much larger neighbor, the Democratic Republic of the Congo, or the DRC. At first glance, Rwanda would appear to be vastly outclassed by the DRC to the point where a Rwandan invasion almost appears to be insanity. The DRC has nearly 10 times Rwanda's population and 89 times Rwanda's land area. It is like a country the size of Massachusetts invading a country the size of the entire Western United States. And yet, the tiny country with 1/10 the population and 1/89 the land area is currently winning decisively. In January of 2025, the UN estimated that between 3,000 and 4,000 Rwandan soldiers had crossed over the border into the eastern DRC to directly support an armed militia organization there known as M23, a supposedly local Congolese rebel group largely made up of ethnic Tutsis that insists is independent from Rwanda, but which is actually directed, armed, funded, and supported directly by Rwanda, according to both the United Nations and the United States. M23 rebels have been spotted operating in the DRC with state-of-the-art equipment, like modern carbines, surface-to-air missiles, anti-tank weapons, helicopter gunships, artillery, and armored vehicles that are rare among East African rebels and make them appear as more of a professional army than a ragtag militia. Throughout 2024, M23 rebels and Rwandan soldiers steadily expanded their area of control in the DRC's North Kivu province immediately across the border from Rwanda. But near the end of January 2025, an earth-shattering development took place. M23 and thousands of Rwandan soldiers surrounded and besieged the major eastern Congolese city of Goma, the capital city of the country's North Kivu province, home to around 1 million people. Within only a matter of days of fighting, the city fell to M23 and Rwandan forces by the 28th of January, marking the largest escalation in the conflict in the eastern DRC in more than a decade. As of this video's production, it's currently unclear how many people were killed in Goma during the week-long battle for the city's control. But the UN has already reported that a minimum of 3,000 people lost their lives during the attack on the city, and that more than 700,000 other people have been forcibly displaced, making it also the deadliest battle fought in the Congo in decades. To put the scale of the devastation here into perspective, M23's Rwandan-supported attack on Goma at the end of January 2025 likely killed more than three times as many people as Hamas's attack on Israel on October 7th did. And yet, there's been barely a peep of interest about it in the Western world. And since then, M23 and their Rwandan allies have been consolidating their control over the DRC's North Kivu province, and they began advancing further into the South Kivu province towards the regional capital there, Bukavu, as well. While M23's leadership have openly stated that their ultimate objective right now is to march all the way to the DRC's capital of Kinshasa and to overthrow the entire country's government. The president of the DRC has already compared Rwanda's president, Paul Kagame, to that of Adolf Hitler, and he has labeled M23 and Rwanda's seizure of Goma and the deaths of thousands in the process as amounting to a declaration of war on the DRC. Historically, Rwanda has attempted to maintain at least some element of plausible deniability concerning M23's operations in the Congo, consistently insisting that they have nothing to do with actually supporting them. But during a recent interview with CNN on the 3rd of February, Rwanda's president was asked this very pointed question.
So let me ask this directly, Mr. President. Today on the 3rd of February, does Rwanda currently have any troops at all in Eastern DRC?
I don't know.
You're the commander-in-chief.
Yeah. There are many things I don't know. But if you want to ask me, is there a problem in Congo that concerns Rwanda and that Rwanda would do anything to protect itself, I'd say 100%.
Before and after this statement by Rwanda's president, there have been many people who have compared Rwanda's recent actions in the eastern DRC to Russia's actions in eastern Ukraine in 2014, with some analysts even calling Rwanda's Paul Kagame the Vladimir Putin of Africa. Rwanda's government publicly maintains an ambiguous position on whether or not its troops are actively invading the DRC, while its M23 proxy force that has seized control over swaths of land across the border justifies its actions based on the grounds that it is defending the DRC's ethnic Tutsi minority from alleged government persecution. Similarly, in 2014, Vladimir Putin covertly deployed Russian soldiers across the border into eastern Ukraine to support pro-Russian separatist militias in the Donbass. Russia then consistently denied that its soldiers were present, while the separatist proxy militias in Donetsk and Luhansk were armed, directed, and supplied by Russia anyway. Seizing control over a swath of territory in the Donbass, the proxy separatist militias claimed that their actions were done in order to defend Ukraine's ethnic Russian minority from alleged government persecution. And then, 8 years later, Putin dropped all of the pretexts when he directly annexed the separatist-controlled areas and invaded Ukraine. In the Rwanda and DRC analogy, what Rwanda has so far done in the eastern DRC is pretty analogous to what Russia did in the Donbass through 2014. And while no direct annexation of territory has taken place just yet, the areas that have come under M23's control in the eastern DRC are effectively functioning as de facto extensions of Rwanda already anyway. Valuable resources worth billions of dollars like gold, coltan, and tin in M23's controlled areas in the eastern DRC are being smuggled back towards Rwanda and exported to countries around the world in a wholesale plunder of the Congo's resources. While M23's capture of Goma and its recent advances further on into South Kivu are risking a dramatic escalation towards a full-blown war across the African Great Lakes region that is pitting Rwanda and their allies like M23 and Uganda against the DRC and their allies like Burundi and maybe South Africa. It is a complicated web of local rivalries and interests mixed with the ambitions of major outside powers like the United States, China, and France. And should the worst come to pass and a full-blown war erupts here due to Rwanda's actions, the entire world should tremble. Because the last time that a war exploded here due to a Rwandan invasion of the DRC in 1998, not even 30 years ago, anywhere between 3 and 5 million people were killed in what has been widely regarded as the deadliest human conflict in history since the Second World War. This conflict in the eastern DRC is very important to understand right now, and it has enormous implications for both the future of Africa and for the rest of the outside world as well, including the Western nations who almost all universally support Rwanda in this conflict. And in order to understand it, it helps to know some of the region's recent history and how this whole conflict today began. While the origins of the Eastern Congo conflict can be traced back to colonial times, the major trigger began in 1994 with the infamous Rwandan genocide. Two major ethnic groups comprised most of the Rwandan population: the Hutus, who made up 85% of the country's population in 1994, and the minority Tutsis, who made up another 14% of the population back then. Over a period of just 100 days over the summer of 1994, the radical Hutu extremist regime that was in power in Rwanda at the time carried out a ruthless and methodical genocide against the country's minority Tutsi population and moderate Hutus that killed around 800,000 people, or about 11% of Rwanda's entire population. A pace of targeted killing that was so extreme that it is only surpassed in all of history by the Holocaust in Europe. As the Hutu extremist regime focused all of its resources on perpetrating the genocide, a young Tutsi named Paul Kagame and his militia of Tutsi exiles called the Rwandan Patriotic Front, or the RPF, based across the border in Uganda, invaded Rwanda and marched on the capital, Kigali, taking it over and overthrowing the Hutu extremist regime and stopping the genocide in the process. During and after the genocide, as Kagame and the Tutsi-led RPF took over, fear of reprisals swept through the Rwandan Hutu community, which led to around 2 million ethnic Hutus fleeing across the border into the DRC, who began settling in huge refugee camps in the neighboring North and South Kivu provinces, dramatically altering the demographic makeup of these two DRC provinces with huge Hutu populations in the process. It also led to the ethnic Tutsi community that was already present in the eastern DRC, also known as the Banyamulenge, to feel increasingly threatened and anxious. The vast majority of the millions of Hutus who fled into the eastern DRC were civilians, but among them included many of the Hutu extremists who had directly organized and participated in the genocide. Kagame's now Tutsi-led government in Rwanda accused the dictator of what was then called Zaire at the time, Mobutu Sese Seko, of harboring these Hutu extremists and allowing them to organize on Rwanda's border and to terrorize the DRC's local Tutsi community. which Kagame asserted was an unacceptable national security threat. Because of Mobutu Sese Seko's support of rebel groups all across Africa, Kagame was able to masterfully gather together a coalition of states opposed to him, including Uganda, Burundi, and Angola, and with the help of the primary opposition leader in Zaire at the time, named Laurent Kabila, they all invaded Zaire in 1996, and within a year, by 1997, they managed to rapidly overthrow Mobutu Sese Seko's decades-long regime. This conflict was called the First Congo War. Thousands of people were killed, and Kagame's ally Laurent Kabila was installed as Zaire's new leader, who promptly renamed the country back to the DRC. But the peace didn't last for long. Conspiracies within the DRC quickly began swirling that Laurent Kabila was nothing but an installed puppet of Kagame and the Rwandans. And to try and crush that perception, Kabila began purging ethnic Tutsis from his new government, and he began demanding that the Rwandan army withdraw from the North and South Kivu provinces. He began allowing Hutu extremist militias to begin organizing on the border with Rwanda again. Relations rapidly deteriorated, and Rwanda and Uganda both responded to the change in circumstances by invading the Eastern DRC once again in 1998, sparking the Second Congo War. The Rwandans stated that their primary war aim this time around was to create a buffer zone in the eastern DRC that would be militarily occupied by their soldiers in order to create space between Rwanda itself and the Hutu extremist militias operating in the eastern DRC. And the result, this time, was the biggest war that has ever been fought on the African continent in all of human history. Rwanda's invasion was supported by Uganda and Burundi, while the DRC was backed up by troops coming from their former enemy Angola, along with Chad, Zimbabwe, and Namibia, while dozens of various rebel militias supported one side or the other. A complicated web of alliances that have led some people to call this conflict the African World War. Laurent Kabila, the president of the DRC who was installed during the First Congo War, was assassinated in 2001 as the war continued, and his son, Joseph Kabila, assumed power in the DRC in his place. Between 2002 and 2003, the junior Kabila entered into peace negotiations with the Rwandans that ended the fighting of the Second Congo War after nearly 5 years of apocalyptic warfare. The massive scale of the fighting and the widespread famines and other humanitarian disasters that were directly caused by that war caused millions of deaths, according to multiple different sources. Between 3 million deaths, according to lower estimates, up to as many as 5.4 million deaths, according to higher estimates. Making the Second Congo War, fought between 1998 and 2003, by far the deadliest conflict fought in history since the Second World War, and tragically known about by hardly anybody in the Western world. In the aftermath of the war, a tenuous peace was reached, but instability continued reigning supreme in the eastern DRC, in the frontier provinces of South and North Kivu, and also Ituri, along the borders with Burundi, Rwanda, and Uganda. More than 100 different armed militia and rebel groups have since been sparked into existence here across the eastern DRC, as the central government of the country has struggled immensely for decades with maintaining its authority in the area. This is largely because still to this day, the DRC has no railways or even any paved roads that connect North and South Kivu to the rest of the country. The DRC's capital, Kinshasa, is around 1,500 kilometers away from the major cities here in Goma and Bukavu. And everything the DRC wants to transport to them, whether it's troops or supplies, have to cross vast distances, largely over gravel highways if they're lucky, or muddy, flooded earth tracks if they're not so lucky. Meanwhile, Goma and Bukavu are both literally right across the border from Rwanda, and only about 100 kilometers away from the Rwandan capital of Kigali, while Rwanda today has a much more extensive network of paved roads than the DRC has, with paved highways that can efficiently carry troops and supplies leading directly to both Goma and Bukavu straight from the capital, Kigali. Now, among those 100-plus militias and rebel groups that came to exist in the eastern DRC was a major Hutu extremist militia with members who directly perpetrated the 1994 genocide in Rwanda, called the FDLR. The FDLR came to prominence in the eastern DRC during the 2000s, and they rapidly attracted thousands of radical Hutu fighters to their cause. And they found themselves in conflict both with the DRC government and a Congolese Tutsi militia that also formed in the North Kivu province that was known as the CNDP, the predecessor organization to the modern Tutsi M23 militia. For years across the 2000s, there was basically a three-way insurgency in the Eastern DRC between the Hutu extremist FDLR militia, the Tutsi CNDP militia, and the DRC government until, on the 23rd of March 2009, the Tutsi CNDP militia agreed on a peace treaty with the DRC government. This date, March 23rd of 2009, is where the later M23 movement would take its name from. A few years later, in 2012, alleging that the DRC government had failed to adequately implement the March 23rd peace treaty, hundreds of mostly Tutsi officers and soldiers within the DRC military, who were largely former members of the CNDP militia, mutinied and formed the new M23 rebel militia. It's widely believed that almost immediately after, M23 began being supported and armed by the Rwandan state intelligence and security agencies, and they were able to rapidly overwhelm a swath of territory in the DRC's North Kivu province, culminating with them managing to capture North Kivu's provincial capital of Goma, just like they would do much later again in January of 2025. But that first time they did it in 2012, Rwanda faced a catastrophic tsunami of international pressure to abandon M23 and to give up their seized control over Goma. Hundreds of millions of dollars worth of annual aid to Rwanda was sanctioned by countries from around the world, including the US, UK, and France, which, for a country that relied on foreign aid for at least one-third of its entire government budget, was immediately catastrophic. The UN authorized an offensive brigade to be created within the UN peacekeeping mission to the Eastern DRC, known as MONUSCO, to fight alongside the DRC government against M23. Under unbearable international pressure, Rwanda relented and abandoned all of their support for M23 in 2012, which led to M23 being decisively defeated and kicked out of Goma by the DRC army and UN peacekeepers. By 2013, the UN peacekeeping mission in the Eastern DRC had swelled in size to become the largest UN troop deployment in the entire world. With around 18,000 peacekeepers deployed to the mission, M23 was quickly militarily defeated and then went dormant and kept a low profile for years until very recently in 2021, when it would finally reemerge back onto the world stage once again. But over the 8 years in between that time, Rwanda adopted a clever strategy of boosting its image across the Western world and making itself as useful and important to the Western world as possible, so that the next time it wanted to use M23 as a proxy force of conquest in the Eastern DRC, the sanctions that crippled and undermined their ambitions in 2012 would never happen again. In particular, Rwanda began aggressively investing into its own armed forces and began positioning itself as a bastion of stability in Africa that the Western world could reliably depend upon to solve problems elsewhere on the continent. Rwanda has since become the world's second largest police and troop contributor to UN peacekeeping missions, and the largest contributor to them in Africa. Right now, in 2025, Rwanda has more than 5,000 of their soldiers deployed to various UN peacekeeping missions, a massive amount for a country of their relatively small size. The high reputation of Rwanda's huge troop contributions to UN peacekeeping missions eventually led to other African nations outsourcing some of their security needs to the Rwandans as well. At the start of 2021, as rebels in the Central African Republic were preparing to storm the capital city, that country's president contracted Rwandan troops and Russia's Wagner Group to push the rebels back. Then, just months later, faced with an ISIS insurgency in their far northern Cabo Delgado province that had killed thousands of people, Mozambique called on the Rwandan military for direct support next. This time, Rwanda's military intervention in Mozambique was directly supported and praised by France, because the ISIS insurgency there was directly threatening French national interests, chiefly the $20 billion liquefied natural gas project in the area that the biggest company in France, Total Energies, was busy investing in and building. At that time, France's continued military presence and interventions across Africa were increasingly coming under scrutiny, and leading to allegations that the French were practicing neo-colonialism on the continent. The government of Mali had already ordered the French military to leave their country by that point, and within only a few more years, the governments of Burkina Faso, Niger, Chad, and Senegal, all former French colonies in Africa, would follow suit with their own ultimatums on French forces withdrawing. So, rather than deploying French forces to Cabo Delgado and Mozambique directly to fight against ISIS and to secure their expensive and critical gas project there, the French found it highly useful to essentially rely on the Rwandans as a proxy security force instead. And so, shortly afterwards, the French were more than happy to provide $495 million worth of development aid to Rwanda, while the European Union has also showered tens of millions of euros onto the Rwandan army since then to keep them around safeguarding Total's gas project in Mozambique. The Rwandan forces have proven themselves to be highly competent by successfully containing ISIS in Mozambique, while Rwanda has also been in negotiations recently to deploy a third bilateral security force to Benin to try and contain another Islamist insurgency going on there as well, which again would directly benefit Western nations by allowing them to contain unstable regions in Africa without them having to overtly commit their own troops. In addition to making itself useful as a dependable security partner to the West, Rwanda also spent the years after 2013 carefully building up its reputation as a hub for Western investment and tourism in Africa, and, most controversially, as a major source of critical raw materials that the West desperately desires as well. Rwanda has aggressively invested in major sports brands across the Western world to promote tourism and its image as a clean, safe to visit, and prosperous country in sub-Saharan Africa. They've become a major sponsor in European football teams like the UK's Arsenal, France's Paris Saint-Germain, and Germany's Bayern Munich, in blockbuster Visit Rwanda deals that have collectively been worth hundreds of millions of dollars. But they've been well worth the investment because they've helped to attract millions of tourists to Rwanda. In 2022 alone, more than 1 million tourists visited Rwanda, making it one of the top 10 most visited countries on the African continent, despite it being one of the smallest. Rwanda has also been a major founding partner of the NBA's Africa League, while Formula One is currently deciding between Rwanda and South Africa as the final two options to host a new Grand Prix in Africa by 2027. Rwanda's economic growth and stabilized position under Paul Kagame's continuous leadership since the 1994 genocide has been nothing short of extraordinary, and it's often earned Rwanda the nickname of the Singapore of Africa among his international supporters. Indeed, Rwanda's GDP has grown at high rates of more than 8% per year since the year after the genocide in 1995, while the country's life expectancy has dramatically improved from only 49 years in 2001 to nearly 68 years today, among the highest seen anywhere in sub-Saharan Africa now. Rwanda has proven that sub-Saharan African countries can dramatically turn themselves around from the horrors of war and genocide. And that hasn't even touched on the previous UK government's whole asylum plan they had with Rwanda. Before the plan was ultimately scrapped, the UK government wanted to deport asylum seekers to Rwanda, and they'd agree to pay £370 million to Rwanda for the deal by 2026, roughly 10 times as much as the UK's annual aid contributions to Rwanda. Today, Rwanda receives more than $1.3 billion a year in foreign aid from countries around the world, which on a per capita basis makes Rwanda the highest recipient of aid in its entire region, at $98 a year per Rwandan citizen, compared to just $55 in Uganda, $47 in Burundi, and only $37 in the DRC. Nearly one-third the amount of per capita foreign aid as Rwanda receives. All of this effectively means that after 2021, when M23 was reactivated in the eastern DRC and continued its insurgency there again, the outside world was going to be far more reluctant to severely sanction and punish Rwanda again, like they did the last time in 2012. And that seems to have been exactly Rwanda's calculus too. As it has done before in the past, M23 justified restarting its insurgency after 2021 in order to defend the ethnic Tutsi community in the eastern DRC, who were allegedly under threat by Hutu extremist militias in the area like the FDLR. But the FDLR was largely already a spent force by that time. The UN estimated that the FDLR only had somewhere between 1,000 and 1,500 fighters by that point, only about one-seventh of the numbers that they had previously back in 2007, when they posed a much more substantial threat to the Tutsis in Rwanda. Kagame's government in Rwanda has frequently characterized the continued existence of the FDLR and other Hutu extremist militias in the eastern DRC as an existential threat, and he has accused the current DRC government of allegedly directly supporting these militias. But the small size of the FDLR today has hardly justified Rwanda's decision to deploy thousands of their own soldiers across the border into the DRC that led to the conquest of Goma and its 1 million inhabitants. Instead, the current Rwandan invasion of the eastern DRC and its support for M23 is more based around economic and geopolitical interests rather than pure self-defense as claimed. Between 2023 and 2024, leading up to the assault on Goma in early 2025, M23 seized control over large areas throughout the North Kivu province in the DRC that also happens to be one of the DRC's most mineral-rich regions as well. As of early 2025, M23 has taken over several rich mining areas in gold, coltan, and tin across the eastern DRC that are becoming increasingly critical industrial resources. Mysteriously, since these advances, despite possessing almost no gold or coltan within their own borders, Rwanda has suddenly become a major exporter of both resources. Coltan in particular is a very critical resource today because it's a vital raw material for producing electronics like smartphones and laptops. By far, the largest amount of known coltan reserves in the world are in the DRC, where about 70% of the world's coltan reserves are known to be located, primarily located in the North and South Kivu provinces that are located right across the border from Rwanda. As a result, for many years, the DRC was also the world's largest exporter of coltan until in the 2010s when, mysteriously, Rwanda began surpassing them. In 2014, 2015, 2017, and 2019, Rwandan exports of coltan surpassed those of the DRC, and then they did so again in 2023, despite Rwanda itself having hardly any known coltan reserves within their own borders. The open secret is that Rwandan troops and their M23 proxy forces operating in the eastern DRC have been just taking over the rich Congolese coltan mines there and smuggling the coltan back over the border into Rwanda, before being exported to global markets to major tech companies like Intel. And the smuggled Rwandan coltan taken from the DRC has been becoming increasingly more important to global consumer supply chains. In 2023, Rwanda was the third largest source of coltan imports to the United States. While in early 2024, the EU signed a new memorandum of understanding with Rwanda to increase their own imports of Rwandan smuggled coltan as well. After M23 seized control over a major coltan mine in the eastern DRC here at Rubaya in April of 2024, the UN reported that by the end of the year, M23 had generated around $800 million in revenues from that single mine alone. In 2023, the DRC's finance minister, Nicolas Kazadi, said that the DRC was losing around $1 billion a year worth of their country's minerals to M23 in Rwanda, while a former UN investigator named Jason Stearns claimed that between 2023 and 2025, Rwanda's mineral export revenue mysteriously doubled and is now greater than $1 billion a year. Understandably, this has led to a very significant degree of outrage within the DRC towards not only Rwanda, but towards Rwanda's backers in the Western world who have so far refused to really do anything to hold Rwanda back, even after the capture of Goma that led to the deaths of thousands of people. Unlike 2012, when M23 last took over Goma, no foreign aid to Rwanda has been cut and no meaningful sanctions have been imposed, because the West has simply found themselves too reliant on Rwanda for multiple reasons now. Rwandan troops safeguard billions of dollars of French LNG investments in Mozambique and contribute heavily to peacekeeping missions in South Sudan, the Central African Republic, and probably Benin soon, that serve as an attractive alternative to countering Russian mercenaries and influence in Africa through the Wagner Group. Rwanda has close investment relations with major Western sports organizations. While Rwanda's increasing plundering of the DRC's resources in the East have become a way for Western companies to access the DRC's resources by proxy through Rwanda instead, a partner that they view as being more reliable and stable to do business with than the DRC. Many Congolese have begun to see M23 and Rwanda's conquest in the East as effectively a Western conquest of their resources through Rwanda and M23 as proxies. Which is why, on the 28th of January, right after Goma fell to M23 and the Rwandans, Congolese protesters violently attacked the embassies of the United States, France, Belgium, and Japan, along with the embassies of Rwanda and Uganda in the DRC's capital, Kinshasa. With most of the world seemingly indifferent to M23 and Rwanda's actions in the Eastern DRC this time around, and with most of the focus in the West being on other major ongoing global conflicts in Ukraine and Gaza and even in Sudan and Myanmar, it's likely that M23 and Rwanda will continue further with their ongoing offensive by attempting to consolidate their control over North Kivu and prodding into South Kivu in search of further conquests. And there's a substantial risk that because of that, the current conflict in the Eastern DRC that Rwanda is stoking could dramatically explode into another full-blown regional war like the catastrophic Second Congo War again. Burundi, which currently has a government that's dominated by Hutus, is deeply suspicious that Kagame's Rwanda is funding Tutsi opposition groups in their country, and might have designs on overthrowing their government as well. Like how M23's leaders have already stated that one of their objectives is overthrowing the government in the DRC. Thus, Burundi has already deployed several thousand soldiers into the South Kivu province of the DRC to fight alongside the DRC government against Rwanda and M23. While Burundi has also collaborated with the Hutu extremist FDLR militia in the Eastern DRC recently as well. And at the same time, Uganda is facing a looming succession crisis with an aging 80-year-old dictator who's been in power since the 1980s, and his unpredictable son, who's the heir apparent. In 2022, this Ugandan dictator's son took to Twitter and repeatedly threatened that he would invade and conquer Kenya, calling the border between them a fake colonial construct and boasting that it would only take him and his army just 2 weeks to reach the Kenyan capital of Nairobi. Ugandan troops are also already present in the Eastern DRC, where they are busy carving out their own sphere of influence in collaboration with Rwanda and M23, meaning that if a full-blown war explodes between the Rwandans and M23 against the DRC government in Burundi, it's likely that, just like during the first two Congo wars, Uganda would likely take the Rwandan side again if there is to be a third Congo war soon. Rwanda and M23's actions in the Eastern DRC and the capture of Goma, though not reported on much in the Western world, represents the biggest threat to Africa's borders that have been seen in decades. While Rwanda's assault on the territorial integrity of the DRC is only the latest challenge to the global norm against territorial conquest that's being challenged by the Russians in Ukraine and by the Israelis in the occupied Palestinian and Syrian territories. It will be very important to continue paying attention to this as the situation continues developing. Now, there's a lot of data that goes into producing these kinds of videos. Whether it's visually showing the scale of Rwanda and the DRC in an American context and comparing their population sizes, detailing out where the Eastern DRC's valuable resources are located and how M23 and Rwanda are pillaging them, or showing you how transportation infrastructure and geography contribute to the instability in the Eastern DRC and the proliferation of rebel groups there, the ability to actually visualize raw data like this on the map instead of just reading about it in text format is exactly what makes learning about these kinds of complicated geopolitical subjects so fascinating to me. And it's why the Exploring Data Visually course is one of my favorite courses that I've ever taken with this video sponsor, Brilliant. They start out by teaching some real bare-bone fundamentals through interactive exercise and straightforward explanations. Then, as you progress, they bring these small concepts together into the bigger process, and soon enough, you have a decent grasp of what originally seemed like a daunting subject. And the same goes for all the other subjects they cover too, from calculus to AI to computer science, advanced physics, geometry, and much more. I think that Brilliant is perfect for the kind of person who genuinely loves understanding new things, as they get you to the level where you can apply the concepts you learn into your everyday life. And they also make learning super practical. Their courses break down into short segments of about 15 minutes, so you can easily use their app to make steady progress in learning while you're commuting or have some free time. So, if you're the type of person who loves learning new things, you can try out everything Brilliant has to offer for free for a full 30 days by clicking the button here on your screen right now, or by visiting brilliant.org/reallifelore, or by clicking the link that's down below in the description. And best of all, you'll also get 20% off of an annual premium subscription. It's an incredible way to help support my channel and learn some cool new things at the same time. And as always, thank you so much for watching.